And now, the new adventures of Matt Hancock.
It really is fantastic to be here in Canterbury today to meet with you all and strategize some initiatives to make the Canterbury Playhouse the most dynamic and successful theatre in East Kent. I'm Matt Hancock, roving expert, reality TV star, and freelance political operative. Perhaps we could all go around the room and introduce yourselves.
I'm Jasper Thewlis, creative director of the Canterbury Playhouse.
I'm Kenny Bunkport, arts liaison officer at Canterbury City Council.
I'm David Gumption in marketing.
So let's kick off with a brainstorm, or actually we can't say that anymore, can we? It's offensive. So instead, let's kick off with an idea shower to identify some key ideas we might develop for establishing the Playhouse at the heart of the community.
I don't know. I mean, the Pensioners like a musical. Should we just go and do Guys and Dolls again? Oh, for Christ's sake.
The fact is, the theatre is making such dramatic losses.
Well, let me tell you what worked for us with shoring up the losses of the NHS. While I was the health secretary...
No. I'll tell you what, you snub-nosed, crumpled Kleenex of a washed-up wank stain. Let's not talk about your time as health secretary, eh?
If we wanted your advice on how to destroy a perfectly good NHS, we'd have asked for it.
Yeah, you're here for one reason and one reason only, Hancock. Eat this crispy alligator penis, you fat boy.
Chew the penis.
This is not what I had in mind when I left politics. I'm a celebrity. Get me out of here. So I told him to go piss up a rope. I thought Darren was going to join us, but he said he didn't fancy it. He says you've changed since you became an MP.
I haven't changed. That's nonsense. Darren's just avoiding me because he owes me 50 quid.
He says you've become a typical MP.
Well, of course he would say that, wouldn't he?
He says you're incapable of answering a simple question with a simple answer anymore.
Well, that simply isn't the case. I mean, if you look at the figures...
Well, there you go. That's what he said. Anyway, my round. What are you having? Same again?
Well, yes, having the same again is certainly one option available to us at this time.
Or do you want something else?
I think it's far too soon to be signing up to any policy or pledge that commits us to one fixed course of action during such turbulent times. The prudent approach, of course, is to wait and see.
They've got a very nice citrusy beer.
Well, yeah, I find it absolutely extraordinary that the Honourable Member wants to lock us into a citrusy beer at this extremely challenging time when the majority of families are struggling to cope with the biggest cost of living crisis in recent memory.
Or I could get you a gin... and tonic?
Well, let me ask him. What would he do with inflation at 10%?
Me? I'm probably going to have a rum and coke.
Well, once again, Mr. Speaker, he hides behind a rum and coke while people are waiting up to 4 months for a simple GP appointment. Weak! Weak! Weak!
Oh, Jesus. I'm just going to buy you another beer. Do you want more crisps?
It would be a very foolhardy decision to rule crisps out this close to a general election.
Is that a yes?
I refer the Honourable Gentleman to the answer I gave a few moments ago.
Is that a yes?
It could potentially be yes, if and when the crisps meet the 5 economic tests currently set by our Treasury.
Oh yes, and how is Karen?
My marriage is not on the table when it comes to tabloid speculation.
So, beer and crisps.
Let him order that, Mr. Speaker, and let him see how disastrous it would be for the British economy.
Oh, God.
Tonight on Was He Though, we put another deviant criminal under the microscope, look at the facts, and consider the evidence that led to their arrest, downfall, and notoriety that shall ring evermore unto eternity. With me this week is Professor Gordon Baudelaire, former inspector with the CID and now head of the Ghastly Crimes MA course at the University of East Anglia. We're looking this week at the deceased monster and former half-wit Frederick West, who chopped up a harrowing number of ladies and hid parts of them throughout the home he shared with his awful wife, Rose. Some say he was just a blood-crazed simpleton, but there are people out there who insist he was also supremely disturbing, out of control, a sexual deviant. Good evening, Professor.
Good evening.
Professor Baudelaire, let's look at Fred West. And my question to you is simply this. Was he, though?
Oh, without a doubt.
Professor Baudelaire, thank you.
I'm something of an American legend. I'm a cultural zealot. I'm a wandering troubadour, a defiant activist, a warrior artist, an overrated actor. And I was there at the flashpoints of American 20th century history. A bit like Forrest Gump. I've seen things, and now, after all this time, I shall impart to you, dear listener, those stories. What you're about to hear is the God's honest truth, every bleeding word of it. These are the chronicles of The Witness. Chapter 15, Apocalypse Now. Yeah, the seed was sown sometime in middle of 74, I suppose. I had this little Hollywood bungalow at time, trying to be a player out there in the film industry. I'd been hanging out in the valley at the screenwriter Johnny Milius's. He's a little sweetheart, Milius, but he can be a macho shithead. And so it proved, as we sat out naked on his veranda one late spring evening and playing poker, drinking meths, and doing the odd round of Russian roulette with his old service revolver. Yeah, the writers Bob Town and Paul Schrader were staying too, and after an all-night stint of hard drinking, hard drug-taking, and other largely performative battles of masculinity, Town had passed out, pussy boy Schrader cried off home, and Milius won our arm wrestling match by taking three speedballs. He damn near broke me arm off. Then, in celebration, he beat his naked torso with a dead raccoon and downed 12 quaaludes in half bottle of tequila. I said, calm down, John, you nutter. It's only 8 a.m. Sit down, shut up and listen. I'm about to change your life. I said, I've got an idea, John. You know that minor imperialist novella of 1899, Heart of Darkness, by Joseph Conrad? He said, what, the one about going upriver in search of an ivory trader gone native? That explores themes of power dynamics and morality against a backdrop of African colonialisation. I said, yeah, that's the one. Well, how's about we redo that in movie form as a comment on the current war being waged over in that Vietnam? Well, Milius almost shat himself in anticipation. I said, you write the bastard, I'll find the filmmaker to do it justice. And so it began. There were a few young guns making waves in Tinseltown at time. You know, Scorsese was good, but, you know, didn't like to leave New York in case he'd miss his mammy. Polanski was too fucking small and weird for my liking. Lucas, all neck, no talent. But I knew of one man that had got the clout, the nouse, the sizeable knackers to get this project done. I called him up. Francis, stop eating. I've got a project for you. It'll be a quickie, cheap as chips, and it'll restore your reputation after that Hackman drivel, The Conversation. He said, I can't, I've got another Godfather coming out. And then, I'm desperate to make the major motion picture of our times, Peggy Sue Got Married. I said, fuck that, Coppola. I said, do my Vietnam movie, it'll be the making of you. He said, Vietnam? Who the bloody hell wants to see a movie about Vietnam? I said, you can have 3 percentage points against the gross and a share in the Chianti Vineyard. Just don't go over budget, you bastard. He said, done.
So, February 1976, we all ship out to Philippines. Vietnam itself was still a little preoccupied, of course, but that lovely Ferdinand Marcos fellow said, Saigon, shite, come to Manila. You can have me army helicopters on days when I'm not violently suppressing insurgents in the south. Well, me and Francis didn't look a gift horse in the mouth when it came to realising our vision. Thing is, though, designer Dino Tavalaris had started making our sets out there. You know, massive jungle temples out of Imelda Marcus's old shoeboxes. And he'd gone done a smashing job, but the bloody weather wouldn't let up. Rain like you wouldn't believe, like a February night in Huddersfield. Kept destroying our sets and equipment, because it were all bleeding cardboard. So the cast arrived to sweltering heat, malarial swamps and little else. Little Harvey Keitel, Sammy Bottoms, Freddie Forrest, Albie Hall and the rest all knew they were gonna be there for a longer haul than anticipated. Keitel ended up being a bag of dog shit though, so we replaced him with Marty Sheen after 4 days. Within 2 weeks of the scheduled 16-week shoot, I could already see Coppola losing his tiny mind. He started raging, racked by self-doubt, screaming, why are we here in bloody typhoon season? I said, relax, Francis, just relax, drink more wine. Feed off the chaos and the madness. It'll all add to the self-mythologizing you're already constructing for yourself anyway. In fact, I said, hey, let's ramp up the pervading sense of nihilism. I know, I said, I'll bring fucking Dennis Hopper in to add to the crazy. And Coppola went with it. You know, started prancing around the set each day in just these little denim shorts, shaved his big old beard off, pointing a gun at his own head whenever there was a photographer about. One day, I said, sit down, Francis, you daft apeth. Look, I've rigged the shit out of these palm trees with explosives, and I've got the helos flying in. I said, this'll be positively Wagnerian. He watched on, impressed, as I napalmed up half a bloody rainforest. He kicked back contentedly, sucked his wine and said, you phosphorescent fuck, that'll win me the Palm d'Or. Oh, I love the smell of Sauvignon in the morning. Then the pièce de résistance. What we'd all been waiting for. I'd negotiated a 3-week contract at $1 million a week for one Marlon Ignatius Brando. Quite a coup, but for the fact that he was a bloody liability. I mean, his career had been dead in the water since the 60s. Sure, the Godfather kind of brought him back, but no one could fucking understand him in that any road. I had to say to him, no mumbling, you bastard, and you can have $1 million advance. But when he arrived at airport, we were all shocked at how he looked. He was a bag of bones. I said, Christ, Marlon, you're not eating. What you are now is a bum. So I had to take him to the hotel restaurant 5 times a day to fatten him up. One night, Marlon and me were at bar with Larry Fishburne and Harrison Ford. And I said, right, boys, my round. Harrison wanted an old-fashioned, of course. Fishburne ordered a scotch. I said, a scotch? You're 14, you little git. You'll start with vodka or I'll be in trouble with your mum. I said, Marlon, what's your poison? He said,
I'll take a beer.
I said, a what?
Yeah, I'll take a beer.
I said, a what? He said, a beer. I said, what kind of beer? He said, Stella! He didn't prove easy to work with, though, did our Marlon. Rewrote all his lines. I mean, he wouldn't learn them, though. Insisted he'd only do them if I wrote them in felt tip on Bobby Duvall's slaphead. He refused to act or even look at Dennis Hopper, on account that Dennis was a fucking maniac. But Dennis had a problem, though, poor sod. You know, he had by now a heavy addiction to candy. Always eating the sweeties and always on a sugar high. Just kept talking nonsense because he liked the fruit gums, like a bleeding toddler. And the diet over there was killing poor Martin Sheen. Kept having these savage bouts of dysentery. Eventually, he shat himself so violently in the bedroom one day, he had to be carted off to hospital. He were mortified. He kept saying, don't tell my publicist. I said, don't fret, Marty. Well, tell him it's just a massive bloody heart attack. For the climactic final end denouement, where Kurtz gets chopped up like a big fat cow by Willard, Marlon ended up fucking off home because, you know, he couldn't be bothered. So I did the rest of it for him. I said to Vittorio, our camera guy, just shoot it by candlelight and I'll shave my head, sit in the shadows, no one will know the difference. So, ladies and gentlemen, that's not Marlon Brando in that final scene. The horror, the bleeding horror, huh? It were me! I were there, and you weren't. So you'll just have to take my word for it. And remember, never let it be said that I'm a name dropper.
Can I help you at all, sir?
I'm interested in taking one of these bad boys for a spin.
The Tesla E is a very popular choice. Let me grab the keys. Do you have some ID?
I've got my National Union of Cheesemongers card, if that's of any use.
Do you have your driver's license by any chance?
My what?
I really need to see a driver's...
Oh, I don't believe it, sorry.
Ian, for fuck's sake.
We'll go again, just give me 2 minutes, I better answer that.
Jesus, love, if it's not your dog barking all the way through a sketch or your insane cat screaming his fucking brains out, now it's the bloody Amazon driver, man! I just can't work like this, surrounded by fucking amateurs. You're unprofessional!
Oh, hello.
Ian Martin?
I am. What can I help you with, officer?
This won't take much of your time, sir.
Someone died, or...?
It's just routine police business. I'm following up on a lead that... what's that? There?
That is, that's my friend James's study. We're in the middle of recording a podcast.
Oh. Oh, which podcast?
The Electric Sodcast. It's a comedy show, sketches and that.
Fascinating.
Are you a real police officer?
Uh-huh.
You sort of remind me of someone.
Oh, no. No, no, I don't. I don't look anything like her.
You do. You look like this movie star.
No. I have different coloured eyes.
Oh, I can't remember. Oh, why is that? I'm usually good with names. You're in The Dark Knight Rises.
Ah, you got me. Anne.
And that one, I saw it on a plane. You were like... like a crook, and there was this blonde woman, and you can't remember her name either.
Rebel Wilson?
Don't remember the name of the film.
The Hustle. I don't talk about that. It wasn't great.
I just can't remember.
Anne Hathaway.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah. Anne Hathaway.
Yeah. Well, it's nice to meet you.
Why are you here and dressed up as a cop?
I was just in the neighborhood.
Just in the...
Yes.
Because don't you live in, I don't know, somewhere in Los Angeles or...
Oh, please let me be on the Sodcast.
Sorry?
Let me be on the Sodcast. Please. Please let me.
Aren't you busy making Hollywood blockbusters?
Oh, screw that. I just want to be on your show. Just once. Just let me be in one sketch. I love your show so much.
You've heard the Electric Sodcast?
I listen to it all the time.
Wow. I mean, that is great to know. Really flattering. But, I mean, look, we don't have guests on the show.
What do you want, money? I have money. Just name your price. 1 million. 2 million.
Is that dollars or pounds sterling?
British pounds.
Oh, no, you're good, thanks. The exchange rate, you know.
Well, if I can't bribe you with money, maybe there's something else I could do. For you? I'd do anything to get on the show. Is that the bedroom down here?
Oh yeah, I wouldn't go in there if I were you.
What?
I had to let the cleaner go. It's a little bit, you know.
I could call a friend. What would you say to partying with me and Jennifer Lawrence from The Hunger Games at the same time?
Oh, that sounds, I mean, that would be a loss of effort. I don't really think... look, I'm sorry. I'm flattered that you like the show, Anne Hathaway. But we're doing a sketch about a second-hand car dealership in Ipswich, and I just don't think that's your sort of thing. I mean, did you ever buy a second-hand car?
No.
Did you ever go to the Suffolk town of Ipswich?
Of course I fucking haven't.
I don't think you could fully inhabit the...
truth of the moment.
You know what? Fuck you! Fuck you and fuck your little podcast!
There she is. There's the Anne Hathaway we've come to know and love.
Suck my dick!
Unbelievable. James, are you there?
Of course I'm here, you stupid sod. I, unlike you, am a professional. Now, what the fuck was that screaming and shouting? Now, that wasn't Scarlett fucking Johansson trying to get on the sodcast again.
As if. And now, in a desperate attempt to fill time, we're reading out the horoscopes from page 36 of the latest edition of the Left of Centre weekly newspaper, The New European.
Aries. Miscommunications from yesterday could continue to cause problems today, dear Aries, as Mercury and Chiron squares off in the sky. Try not to shut down if you have issues that need addressing, but remember to see things from multiple perspectives if you truly seek resolution. Remember, there are no bad ideas unless you're talking about Britain leaving the EU. Taurus. Don't feel guilty about setting boundaries in order to preserve your emotional and mental well-being, dear Bull, as the Aries moon flashes its nips at Saturn. These vibes are all about protecting yourself, though you'll also be asked to acknowledge your responsibilities and remove the trade boundary in the Irish Sea immediately. Gemini. Be careful who you trust today, dear Gemini, as Mercury squares off with Chiron. This cosmic climate could lead to betrayals, making it important to maintain healthy boundaries. Frustrations may come to a head this afternoon when the Aries moon forms a harsh aspect to Pluto, and friendships might crumble if you can't monitor your emotions or if you do something as unbelievably short-sighted and economically disastrous as voting to withdraw from the single market in 2016. Cancer. Take an assertive approach to the morning, dear Crab, as the Aries moon blows a kiss to Sirius Saturn. These vibes can help you make headway within your personal and professional goals, especially when swift and decisive actions are taken. But don't take them to Dover, because you'll just become stuck in the huge 20-mile queue of lorries waiting to be processed and allowed to board a ferry to the European mainland. We used to enjoy frictionless trade with Europe, you know. Leo. Open yourself up to blessings this morning, sweet lion, as the Aries moon flutters its eyelashes at Saturn. This cosmic climate will bring stability to your heart, though a karmic element will also come into play, marking the perfect occasion to do something nice for someone you love. Unless it's Boris Johnson. Don't do anything nice for Boris Johnson. The former PM is a liar, a cheat, and a criminal. I hope his knob drops off. More next time, my sex zodiacs.
So miss me not when I am gone, for I was neither meek nor mild. I'm steeped in sin, I reek of gin, and once I drowned a child.
The poet and entertainer Adelaide Hairpin, who died today, aged 97. The Electric Sodcast was written and performed by James Burton and Ian Martin, with Emily Zickler. Catering by Pizza Piss. Our original music was written by a 9-year-old.